Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Bob Keebler, and we're here to talk about Roth conversions after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and the pending Secure Bill. Welcome. Let's jump right in. Roth conversions will actually be more popular after the Secure Act than they were before. And that's because Roth conversions can primarily be used to manage tax brackets from the time a person turns, say, age 60 to the time they die at 85, rather than having their children take that compressed amount of wealth out of their IRA or ERISA plan over a 10-year period of time. The Secure Act is H.R. 1994, and Section 401 of the Secure Act modifies the required postmortem minimum distribution rules for designated beneficiaries. Basically, this requires all IRAs and qualified plans to be distributed within a 10-year period of time after someone dies. So this proposal is effective for individuals dying after December 31st, 2019, so beginning January 1st, 2020. There are a number of exceptions, including the surviving spouse. So the surviving spouse will still be able to do a plain vanilla rollover. Children under the age of majority, disabled individuals, chronically ill individuals, and an individual not more than 10 years younger than the employee. For example, your brother or your sister. So this all becomes very important. Now, what we're trying to do is figure out what strategies and tactics are going to work. Roth conversions will be one of those strategies, along with spousal rollovers to generate more deferral, multi-generational spray trusts for traditional IRAs. Paying IRAs to charitable remainder trusts will be very popular going forward, especially for those that are charitably inclined. Having IRAs payable to trusts that are out of state to avoid the state income tax, for example. If you're in a state like Minnesota that under the Fielding case will not tax you on an out-of-state trust, so you die, you leave your IRA to a South Dakota trust, your children are Minnesota residents, Minnesota does not have a throwback rule. Once you get past the money coming out of the IRA and that's been taxed for federal purposes at the trust level, Minnesota should not be able to tax those distributions going back. There's other states like Minnesota. You want to look at Steve Ocean's state-by-state chart on this issue to best understand how your state fits in. Some people will be using life insurance to offset the risk of early death if you do a Roth conversion, and other people will be using life insurance when you have an estate tax simply to relocate funds outside of the taxable estate and perhaps to use those funds to pay the estate tax so you do not have to reach in to the IRA to pay the estate tax. What are the goals? The goal in the world of secure strategies is very simple. One, retain deferral of income tax. Two, bracket management within a family. Three, fulfilling charitable goals with income in respect of a decedent. Converting ordinary income to capital gain. You can do that within the context of a CRT. And managing state income taxes. So bracket management is primarily what the Roth IRA will do for your clients. The Roth IRA is all about bracket management. Remember, generally, big picture, 100% of the growth of a Roth IRA is tax exempt. No required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half. That's going to change to 72 under the Secure Act. And RMDs on inherited Roth IRAs. So we are going to have RMDs after a person dies, would they require under the Roth IRA that will also be subject to the 10-year rule. one of the reasons to convert to a Roth IRA is because of what happens at the required beginning date, while you're alive, while your health is vibrant. The Roth IRA continues to grow on that same exponential trajectory as it may have from age 60 on if you haven't touched it. But it's going to grow, that same curve is going to continue until you die. Where with a regular IRA, you have required minimum distributions, which are going to drag that down. Now, reasons for converting to a Roth IRA. There are a number of very good reasons to convert to a Roth IRA. But you might have someone uniquely situated where they have a charitable carry forward that's about to expire, someone with ITC credit carry forwards or NOL carry forwards. Remember, after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, you can only use an NOL to the extent of 80% of your income. You may even have somebody with high basis, non-deductible traditional IRAs. The key to the Roth, one of the reasons mathematically why a Roth works, is the suspension of the minimum distribution rules at your required beginning date. This, of course, provides a considerable advantage mathematically to the Roth IRA holder. Also mathematically, paying the income tax before the estate tax compared to the income tax deduction obtained when a traditional IRA is subject to estate tax is very powerful. In other words, paying the income tax first is better than the 691C deduction, much better. Taxpayers who can pay the income tax on the IRA from non-IRA funds are going to benefit greatly from the Roth IRA because of the ability to enjoy greater tax-free yields. So paying with outside funds makes sense. Reasons for converting to a Roth IRA: taxpayers need to use IRA funds to fund their basic exclusion amount, and they're well advised to consider making a Roth IRA election for that portion of their overall funds. Taxpayers making the Roth IRA election during their lifetime reduce their overall estate. That lowers the effect of higher estate tax rates, and it also can get you out of state, S-T-A-T-E, state estate tax. Now, one of the things that I focus on a lot when we're counseling clients on Roth conversions is that federal tax brackets are more favorable for married couples filing joint returns than for single individuals. Post-death distributions are also tax-free to the beneficiaries. If we end up with a sunset, if the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act sunsets like it very well may, then tax rates are expected to increase in the near future, and the impact of the new 3.8% surtax is also very important. The key to successful Roth conversions is to keep as much of the conversion income as possible in the current marginal tax bracket. Now, if you're already at the top bracket, Roth conversions become somewhat easy. But you have to view these brackets first, write this down please, through the eyes of the married couple, then through the eyes of the surviving spouse, and finally through the eyes of the children. What bracket will everyone be in? We do need to take into account the 3.8% net investment income tax when we're doing this math. Now, it's important to remember, brackets right now under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are very attractive for married couples. And when we sunset back to prior law, those brackets won't be anywhere near as good for the taxpayers. And one thing to understand is if you take the single bracket times two, you end up with the married bracket all the way up to the top of the 32% bracket. It's not till you get to the 35% bracket where a marriage penalty begins to incur. One of the most important things we want to cover, and this is really critical, one of the most important things that we want to cover is that you want to do Roth conversions while both spouses are alive. That's when you're going to get to your best bracket. Doing Roth conversions on a single return after the first spouse dies isn't nearly as efficient as doing them while both parties are alive. Now, keep in mind the breadth of the 22 and 24% bracket. You can actually have income up well over $300,000 and still be in the 24% bracket. So you can still have that no matter what bracket you're in. So that's going to be very, very important. So you really don't get to the beginning of each bracket. For example, for a single person, you're in the 10% bracket until $9,700 of income, and then you're in the 12% bracket up to $39,000. The married brackets are actually twice that, okay? So the married brackets are going to be twice that. You can, a married couple can have income of up to $321,000 and still be in the 24% bracket. But a single person, the surviving spouse, only has $160,000 of the 24% bracket. That's a really big deal. And for many clients that, whose primary wealth is in ERISA plans, that's a whole different issue. One thing that I found very helpful is to look at bar graphs of 2017 versus 2019. Now, what you're going to see in this, when we sunset, the top of the 28% bracket will be about just between 220 and 240, where today that the 24% bracket runs over 300,000. Some people believe, and I'm almost in this camp, is that if we are going to sunset, if we're pretty sure of that, most of our clients should be doing Roth conversions to the top of that 24% bracket. Now that's sunset versus where we are. Where we are today versus single is much more telling. It's much more telling for the plain and simple reason that if a couple was at the $300,000 level today, they'd be at 24%. But if husband died and wife was filing a single return, she would be in a 35% bracket, a difference of 11%. So certainly if you have a husband or wife dying early and the survivor is going to be single for a long, long time, what we really, really need to do, okay, what we really, really need to do is look at Roth conversions while both spouses are still alive. Remember, you also get to use the married rates for the last a person, if they die in January, their spouse still gets to file a married return for the entire year. So when you're comparing Roth conversions to the 10-year rule, the real conceptual issue is the purpose of the Roth conversions is to spread distributions out over many years, and basically that lowers the effective tax bracket. So certainly converting within the same bracket is going to be very powerful for most people. So that'd be very powerful. Most people can't get hurt. I'd submit to you, you probably can't get hurt converting, if you're even if you're in the 22% bracket, converting up to the top of the 24, you can hardly get hurt if you're not going to need the money to live on and if you have outside funds to pay those taxes. So it's very important to compare rates and try to wrap your mind around this entire process. Roth conversions will be one of the best planning ideas for clients with large IRAs that find themselves subject to the 10-year rule under the SECURE Act. We have certainly covered a lot of ground today. I hope this 15 minutes has been helpful to you. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Bob Keebler. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access more information on this topic. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening today.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit AICPA.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered. and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.